Hi, this is Caitlin Osmond, 3-time Olympic medalist.
Hi, I'm Maya Shibutani.
And I'm Alex Shibutani.
Hi, I'm Patrick Chen.
Hey guys, this is Adam Rippon.
Hi, I'm Mariana Gasu.
Hey guys, this is Nathan Chen.
Hi, this is Megan Duhamel.
And I'm Eric Radford.
And you're listening to Ice Talk.
Hey everyone, it's episode 70 of Ice Talk, the figure skating podcast from Ice Network. I'm Nick McCarville, back in the host chair after Jackie Wong was holding things down. If you did not get a chance to check out episode 69, he had a great chat with Matteo Rizzo, as well as Kirsten Moore-Towers and Michael Marinaro. Check that out. Of course, all of our episodes available for you online. But this week, we get another Canadian pairs team on. It's Megan Duhamel and Eric Radford. They're fresh off retirement, or the retirement announcement, and they're on tour right now with Stars on Ice in Canada. We had a candid chat for the two of them, talking about reflecting on their career, about Pyeongchang, and a lot more. Here is our discussion with Megan Duhamel and Eric Radford. Well, I am delighted now to be joined by the newly retired Megan Duhamel and Eric Radford. And most people retire at 65, but Megan, you guys are a combined 65 years old, 32 and 33. So you retired just on time. First off, welcome to the show. And I guess, how's life in retirement?
Well, we're not like golfing and living in Florida, like most retired people from Canada tend to go. I mean, we've been really busy doing shows, and, you know, we knew that Pyeongchang was the end of the road in terms of our competitive career, so it doesn't come as any sort of surprise. We were very prepared for this point in our life.
You said that you're not surprised, or that it was something you knew that was coming. Eric, can you kind of detail for listeners out there, what were the discussions like for the two of you coming into, I mean, I don't know when you would even have started those discussions as far as your career and ending your career, at least in a competitive sense. What were those discussions like coming into this season?
You know, I don't think Megan and I ever sat down or went for coffee and were like, you know what? Okay, 2018, and then we're going to retire. Hmm. You know, our plan after 2014 was year by year and see how things go and make a decision as each year and season comes. And I think, you know, as things progress and we had our ups and we had our downs, we were always just on the same page about how we felt about where we were in our career and, you know, how much longer we wanted to compete. And any type of conversations probably just came up as we were skating around the ice in between elements and training. And just like, if things go well in 2018, I think, you know, that's going to be that'll be it. And it was just very, I think, casual.
And there wasn't, I'm assuming, I guess, from either of you, there wasn't that feeling of, oh my gosh, maybe I want to continue, or it felt like sort of the natural end for each of you?
It definitely felt like a natural end. And we were both on the same page with not wanting to go to the World Championships if we achieved our goals at the Olympics.
I actually remember the both of you saying that to me pretty early. I can't remember if it was maybe the first couple of days in Pyeongchang. Was that a weird sort of sense to skate with a different pressure on your shoulders of, if we skate well here, then things are over? Or how do you approach that mentally, I guess? It's just an added layer for an athlete, especially when you're at the Olympics.
I mean, at least for me, I didn't give it a lot of thought. Like, you're so zeroed in on what your job is,
yeah,
and what you have to do at the Olympics. And it was just like this kind of like an afterthought of, you know, we got to get through these four programs. And then when we do, and no, despite what happens, then we'll make a decision. Knowing that, you know, if things go really well, we probably most likely won't go to Worlds. And if for some reason we had a disaster, then okay, the option is there. Just to be aware of it, and so that we can kind of have that pre-game plan, so that as soon as that long program was done, we would have an idea of what we might be doing and what our next, you know, 3-4 weeks were going to look like after the Olympics.
Yeah, so Megan, what have those few weeks since the, I mean, I guess now we're 6 weeks out, but what has life been like? You're retired, you're not golfing, as you say, but how busy has it been? I think you've probably been pretty crazy.
Yeah, we were pretty busy. A couple months before the Olympics, we had arranged that after the Olympics, we would go to Australia for 2 weeks and do some workshops and seminars and shows in Melbourne and Perth. And, you know, we had made that plan, still thinking if we need to go to Worlds, we'll just train while we're in Australia. Huh. Which we're really happy we didn't have to do, because it was exhausting.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun to go and work with the skaters in Melbourne and in Perth. And then we came back home and we had to do choreography for Stars on Ice. And then we headed to Japan to do Stars on Ice Japan for 2 weeks, and now we're just starting out Canada's Stars on Ice tour. So we've been pretty busy. We also have done a few like small club shows in the Montreal area, and you know, we're still plucking away, and things won't really calm down until the beginning of June, because after Canada's Stars on Ice tour, we're going to Korea for All That Skate. So that'll take us until the end of May.
Oh my gosh, you guys are making me tired. Retirement's hard. How much, Eric, we texted a little bit. How much did you love Australia? You guys had a good time there?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really, really interesting and cool trip, but it was very busy. We spent a lot of time on the ice, and we worked really hard while we were there. So we didn't really have a lot of time to kind of explore and see a lot of different things, but there was a really amazing day in Perth. The day we arrived, we got to go to a zoo and see kind of like all of the cool and different Australian animals. Then we went and had lunch at a really beautiful winery, and then we went and watched the sunset on the beach in Perth, which, you know, it sets into the water on the west coast. So we got a little taste of what it's like there, but I think that it'd be really interesting to go back and have a bit more time to not only work with the skaters, but also just to, you know, experience Australia a little bit more.
Yeah, I go down every January for the Australian Open. I probably feel the same, that I'm working too much. I want to enjoy it more. Let's go back to Pyeongchang if we can. Megan, maybe start with you, and Eric mentioned this a little bit, but February 9, 11, 14, 15, the pairs event, because of the fact that Canada was so competitive and you guys ended up winning gold in the team event, the fact that you skated those four programs within, what is that, math, 7 days?
Seven days, yeah.
Did it, I guess first the approach, because it was a discussion point we were having a lot in the media, but how did you approach that? Skating wise, and then when you look back at it now, does it feel like crazy, or does it feel like, huh, we knew we had to do it and we did just fine?
As we were preparing for this season, we knew that Team Canada, we wanted that gold medal in the team event. We were happy to get the silver in Sochi, but we knew that if Canada used all of its top skaters, we really had a chance for that gold medal. So as we started preparing for the season, we started mentally preparing to compete four times in 1 week. Physically, it's no different than what we do at home. In fact, maybe we're even doing less physically during that week at the Olympics than we would do in training at home. But it was more about managing our emotions, especially after that team event. So, you know, we talked a lot and visualized. Sorry.
Your dogs can be part of the podcast too. That's fine.
Sorry. We talked a lot and visualized a lot and discussed with our team how we would manage our energy at the Olympics, maybe not doing every single practice that was available to us. We made sure that we enjoyed the moment when Team Canada won that gold medal, but we still tried to keep our energy low because we knew we had to compete again 2 days later. Looking back on doing that, it does feel a little bit crazy that we did that, especially because we had no trial run of it. It was like, the first time we're going to experience this is at the Olympics, and there's no second chance, and there's no way to really practice that because there's no competition that uses the team event and the pairs competition all within 1 week. Like, preparing and simulating and practicing for that moment was nearly impossible. So we prepared as we do for any competition. We were really in the top shape of our life physically and mentally. And, you know, I think that competing in that team event really helped us for our individual competition. It made us feel prepared and calm and confident when we got on the ice for the pairs short and the pairs long. So I'm very happy that we decided to do that.
Yeah. Eric, Megan mentions kind of managing your energy. I mean, you win an Olympic gold medal, which every Olympic athlete especially dreams of. Was that hard, you know, say February 12, 13, especially after winning the gold medal, you have the medal ceremony, all of the Canadian press and the attention. Was that difficult to really sort of turn your attention that quickly to the pairs event?
I didn't find it that difficult. And I think a lot of it had to do with what Megan was just talking about mentally preparing before we even arrived. You know, I can remember arriving in Sochi and everything feeling so electric and just like big and exciting. And then this time when we arrived in Korea, it was like more like returning home. It was a lot more just comfortable, less stressful, a little bit more quiet, smaller. And I think it was like keeping our focus in that very sort of small zone that we created for ourselves. And that applied to that moment when we won the gold medal. As Megan said, it's like we let ourselves just, you know, be in the moment and experience it all for a small amount of time. And then it was like back to that little bubble that we had created for ourselves. And, you know, I looked at my medal before I went to sleep. I put it in this box, put it in my drawer, and I was like, okay, that's it. Like that doesn't even exist anymore. Now everything is starting again and we have like a fresh slate.
Yeah, that's incredible to kind of try to imagine approaching that Paris event sort of as fresh or as a clean slate. Megan, how do you compare the two? Or maybe it's impossible to do so, but a gold medal in the team event, Scott Moyer was, you know, very forthright in talking about, you know, how much Canada wanted that. But then for the two of you, I think really driven through a lot of challenges the last 4 years to try to win an individual medal as well.
Yeah, I mean, they both have a completely different meaning to it. For me, in a way, that gold medal in the team event feels a little bit of like a redemption from Canada not winning that team event in Sochi. The bronze medal that we won in the Paris event, that's the one that really feels like a dream come true and almost like a lifetime achievement award. I think that, you know, that when I look at my medals, I feel so differently about both of them, but the bronze medal really symbolizes the journey, that the highs and the lows on the entire journey in my entire skating career with Eric as a single skater, with my other partners. I don't know, maybe I cherish it a little bit more than the gold medal.
Yeah.
Just a bit.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair enough. Eric, did you want to add anything to that?
It's kind of funny, like the gold medal, of course, it's like cooler because it's gold, you know,
but yes,
the bronze medal, it has more like depth to it. It has a deeper feeling and a deeper meaning for me when I look at it.
You're both talking about looking at your medals. Do you gaze at them longingly at this point in your lives?
It's when other people are like looking at them,
all
and you know, they're like, oh, I want to hold the gold one.
Yeah.
But then, you know, that's the way they feel when they see them because it's gold.
We can come back to this later, but I'm wondering, Megan, what do you feel like your legacy is? Or as, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about the last 4 years and then some personal stuff too, but when you look back at your career, and I know you're only a few weeks now officially retired, but what do you feel like your legacy is?
Oh, my goodness. That's a hard...
It is a hard question.
...statement to think of. I mean, I'd like to think that Eric and I are going to be remembered and known as innovators. And I know that a lot of people see us as a team that pushed the technical boundaries because of the big trick elements like the triple lutz and the throw quad that we did. But I hope it's not lost. Along the way, I guess, is our unique style and the way that we always did try to push the envelope with creativity and innovation throughout our careers, always trying to use different styles of music, different types of music. So I'd like to think that we were innovators artistically as a pair team and technically as a pair team.
Eric, what do you want to add?
Yeah, it's really kind of difficult to remove yourself from yourself and see how you kind of change things. And I mean, as Megan said, I think it's obvious the way that we push the sport technically. And I think that our story is just, I think that, you know, if you had seen us as single skaters, nobody would have ever imagined that we would skate together. And we had our own individual obstacles to overcome, like trying to match our styles, you know, learning specific elements with a big height difference. You know, in some cases, it's actually can be more challenging. And I think that through just pure hard work, we reached levels that you wouldn't have thought we could, just seeing us at the very, very beginning of our career. And I think it's almost like we're like the little team that could, like the little engine that could. We just kept our heads down and we just kept on relentlessly trying to improve. And our story is one that, you know, with hard work, you can achieve anything.
I think a lot of people would agree with that. Megan, when we look at the sport, and I've only covered it for now 5 years, but the way that the pairs discipline has shifted and changed and the levels that have gone up? I mean, you know, you're talking about your impact, the way that the technical side of it, but also physically. I mean, how much did you feel like you had to push yourselves? And then I think you maybe would feel partly responsible for a lot of the incredible level of skating we saw from the pairs in Pyeongchang.
I mean, I'm honored to think that maybe we helped push pair skating to a whole new level. When we started skating together, something like the side-by-side triple lutz, it was just an obvious decision. The triple lutz is no more difficult for us than the triple toe, but mathematically we got more points for it. So a decision like that was just a simple, obvious thing that, yeah, like we're going to maximize what we can do and we will include this jump. And, you know, over the years, the thing that we had to work the hardest on was trying to find a unique style. And we didn't want to be like anybody else. We wanted to be authentically us, to just be Megan and Eric. And our choreographer worked so hard, and I mean, so did we, but she worked really hard coming up with unique music choices and unique choreographic ideas that could make us stand out. And that's something that we really worked hard on. And we tried many things, and some things didn't work and some things did. And I'd like to think that we created a new look, you know, like,
yeah.
People are always, I guess, more drawn to the romantic and lyrical pair skaters. They want to believe that all these teams are in love and these love stories. And, you know, we didn't ever try to attempt to portray that. We decided to be ourselves and to make it work in the best way that we could.
Well, you know, hearing you say all of that, I'm just further, I think, fascinated and impressed at, you know, you leave Sochi having placed seventh, and then you have two incredible seasons. You're two-time world champions. You win 7 of 7 competitions. You win the Grand Prix final. I mean, essentially unbeatable. And you come out of Helsinki, out of the world championships last year, back in seventh place. And obviously, I know both of you have talked about this a lot, Eric, but how do you turn that page going into an Olympic season with knowing that you can skate at that top of the class as far as the pairs discipline goes, but not necessarily being able to find it in that 16-17 season?
I think it's kind of two parts. One part is, I think, taking a deep breath and hitting an internal reset button, you know, erasing all of these expectations and these really, I guess, like these, I guess, preconceived notions about yourself and where you were supposed to place. Like heading into Worlds in Helsinki, I remember thinking, like, what does it mean if we don't win there? And I'm not a world champion anymore. And like that was just such a useless, energy-wasting thought. And then, of course, everything, you know, the injury and everything that happened at Worlds, it was just like, okay, like, here we are on the other side. We're in seventh place. I'm still alive. I'm still waking up every morning. I still love to skate. And then that's the next part. I still love to skate. And so what do? You just keep on going into the rink, and we just keep on, you know, working hard, trying to be better than we were the day before. And then you slowly come out of that slump. And we, you know, just gradually throughout the season worked our way towards being, as Megan said, in the best shape of our lives and, you know, mentally prepared, probably the best we've ever been in our career.
Hmm. Was there a great change? Was there a feeling of, okay, wait, we're not doing this right, or we're overtraining, or we're not necessarily doing what we did in the past?
And when I look back on the season, it's really difficult to kind of put my finger on exactly what changed or... And, you know, I think if you look throughout sports, you know, you can see when a skater is just not, it's just not happening for them at competition, and you can't really tell why. And then, you know, next season they come out and they're just, you know, they're hitting clean programs, and you see this momentum building behind them as the season goes on. And, you know, for us, after 2014, that feeling was so clear. Like, we were skating for ourselves. We had these two new programs that we really loved. We were working on the throw quad, and everything was just coming together, and it almost felt like it was happening by itself. And then that type of energy just wasn't around in the season before the Olympics. And I don't know if I can even tell you why that happened, but after it did, and as this last season started to progress, I could feel that very similar, not the same, but definitely similar feeling just going into the rink every day and as we would go out for competitions as we were having back in 2015.
I think a big part of our struggle the last, I guess, like year and a half going into the Olympics, I mean, there was moments where we truly did lack motivation. You know, I remember after the World Championships in Boston in 2016, really seriously thinking that we should retire. Like, this is the biggest high. We should stop now. It'll never be this good again. And then we, you know, you start preparing for the next season, as you always do, without direction. And that, for me, is where I struggled last season. The 2016-2017 season was really just a lack of direction. And then as the Olympics became to approach, it was like all of a sudden there was almost a newfound motivation, because the one thing we didn't have in our career was that Olympic medal. And, you know, here was a chance to achieve something that we hadn't done before. So a new motivation definitely helped this season. And we made a few changes in our team, you know, working with John Kerr with our choreography. We really enjoyed that process. And just changing our training base, we started training in a little bit of a quieter atmosphere where we got more coaching time. And this season we spent more time working with coaches than we ever have before. And I think that was definitely helpful as well in preparing us and making us feel more confident and more comfortable with what we were doing.
For me, it does feel like a redemption season, or a season where, you know, gosh, you had everything figured out, you were world beaters, and then something went wrong. Does it feel that way to you, or that's not necessarily the way you would look at it?
It definitely feels that way to me. And then a small part of me is like, oh my God, we just figured it out. Why are we stopping? But I mean, I feel like we always, you figure it out and then you lose it again, and you figure it out and you lose it again. And this is just part of life and part of sports, but it definitely does feel a little bit like redemption.
Yeah.
And like, I think a lot of people really, I don't think very many people believed that we could reach the highest level of pair skating again, and even we questioned that. So it always feels nice to kind of do things that people didn't think were possible.
Eric, so much was made here in the U.S. about Adam Rippon and Gus Kenworthy competing as out athletes, as gay athletes at the Olympics, as well as Brittany Bowe, a speed skater. What was the experience like for you? And did it feel any differently, or how did you sort of experience? I know that you came out in the fall of, I think, 2014. So what was that like for you overall?
I think my experience is a little bit quieter than,
than Adam's. you don't say.
Yeah. You know what? It was a little unexpected. When I was heading into the Olympics, I was just so focused on skating that I didn't even think about, like, you know, me being a gay athlete. I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, you know, there's only going to be a few of us there, and it'll be cool to, you know, use that platform to try and get a great message out and try and inspire, you know, young LGBT youth and stuff. But it wasn't until after we had won the gold medal and I saw a tweet saying that I was the first openly gay athlete to win a gold medal at the Winter Olympics. And that was like, oh, wow, like that was a big realization for me. And then everything kind of in that light kind of exploded from there. Coming home and, you know, little things like going up to my hometown and speaking at schools there. I was in Toronto for the Day of Pink, which is an anti-bullying movement. And it's been, I don't know, just quiet and nice and just special, but in a very, I keep on using the word quiet, it's the best word I can describe it with, just simple and easy, and it's just been nice to come home and use everything that happened at the Olympics to just get that message out there and use my story to help, you know, create some positive change.
Megan, how have you experienced that part of Eric's story, and I guess an extension your story?
I guess like Eric might have come out to the world in 2014, but it's not like it was new information to anybody that was part of his life.
Sure.
And when we went to the Olympics, I think our focus was solely on the job that we wanted to do. and anything that kind of came along with it came afterwards and was an added bonus and not something that we put too much effort and thought into as we prepared for the Olympics or while we were really at the Olympics.
So we're officially into retirement. You're busy on tour right now. Megan, I'm a little bit worried about you. You live a very intense life. I feel like you have too much energy to not be out there competing. But tell us, I know you've spoken a little bit about what future plans entail, but kind of detail for people what's next for you.
I mean, I do love the daily grind of training.
You don't say.
It's a part of my life and it's a part of me, and I will always enjoy that. And that's what I loved most about competing was going to train every day. You know, I'm one of the few athletes. I loved going to the gym. I loved going to the rink and doing a long program. It's something that's a part of me that I'm just going to have to find something new to train for. I really, one of my goals is to run a marathon. So I'm definitely going to start training and getting into some races and probably even continue going to the rink and training, you know, a few times a week or whenever I have time, just because I love it. I'm finishing some schoolwork. I'm studying a sports and fitness nutrition certification right now and then a vegetarian nutrition degree. So I'm just finishing up those, and I hope to create a wellness program for young athletes, including proper nutrition habits, proper training habits, mental training, you know, everything that goes into figure skating that's not on the ice. I'd like to create a program that focuses on that. I'm doing my training this summer to be a technical specialist. So I would love to continue in the skating world through being a technical specialist as well.
Awesome. I don't think anyone doubts that you will stay busy, keep busy. And is the program you're talking about, the nutrition program, is that something that you've spoken with Skate Canada or the Olympic Committee about perhaps partnering with them on?
With Patinage Quebec, which is the Quebec Skating Federation, mm-hmm. and Skate Canada, I've spoken with both of them. And hopefully, you know, developing a really great program that's going to help young athletes stay healthy for longer periods of time so that they can enjoy the sport of skating for a long time without being injured and without being sick and, you know, just to keep a healthy mindset.
And Eric, what about for you?
I'm really looking forward to sort of delving into my music, getting back into the studio and recording more. I'd love to go back and finish my music degree that I started, like 11 years ago, and then see what I can do with it, see where I can go with it.
Very cool. What's to come on tour? This will come out later this week, where it's Monday, April 30th. Where's tour heading for the next week or two in Canada?
We are going to Montreal this week, and then we head to Ontario, where we do stops in Toronto, Hamilton, and London. And, you know, we really enjoy doing shows. We're having so much fun getting to perform with our friends. Canada's has a lot of sold-out venues this year, which is the first time since we've been on tour that the crowds are this big and this crazy, and, you know, we love that energy while we're performing.
Is there, I mean, it's a victory tour of sorts, or it is a victory tour, I would say. Is there any concern? I mean, you know, we heard about Patrick Chan stepping away. Huge congrats to Caitlin Osmond for winning her world title. But is there any feel in Canada, like, where's the next generation of skaters going to come from?
I think, you know, a lot of people are very curious about that. And even for us, it's going to be so interesting to see these young and up-and-coming skaters develop over the next couple of years, but especially over the next quad, and just who sort of emerges from the group to, you know, really claim that top spot in Canada. And it's something that, you know, I'm going to really be looking forward to watching over the next few years.
Okay, lastly, you did really well on the legacy question, by the way. There's a little bit of thought involved, but I want you to choose one favorite moment of your career that sticks out for you, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a gold-winning moment, but if you think of one thing or one feeling, one moment that you really want to hold on to forever.
You know, for me, it's going all the way back to 2012 when we won our first national title. To me, that was one of the greatest memories of my entire life. It was one of our favorite programs when we skated to Coldplay. And it was the first time we really had that skate of a lifetime together. And that was the moment that everything began to change for us and the most satisfying moment of my life.
Wow, it's really difficult to choose. I think, you know, for me, something I'll never forget, and that I really, really loved was when the three teams from the Olympics, Shuinhan, Sevchenko and Masso and me, Megan, were sitting in those chairs waiting for the final results to come up. And I mean, as much as Megan and I were kind of like in our own little bubble, we were like sharing this like incredible experience with the Germans and the Chinese. And there was such a just incredible like spectrum of emotions, you know, as everybody was kind of like fulfilling their own goals or missing out on their goals. And I feel like so much of what sport is and represents was just right there in that little room between the three teams. And I think that, you know, us winning, the joy of us winning that bronze medal was amplified by seeing the joy of the Germans win theirs. And I just think, I actually find it funny going back and watching that moment and just seeing all the different reactions and all the different emotions. And, you know, it's just such an incredibly beautiful culmination of our career right in that little moment.
At the Grand Prix final this December, we shared the podium with the Chinese and the German. And when we were on the podium, Eric and I said to each other, oh, it would just be amazing if this was the podium at the Olympics. Because, I mean, we're such big fans and friends with the German and the Chinese pair team. And when we were standing in that bronze medal spot at the Grand Prix final, we literally said to each other, like, if this could just be the podium at the Olympics, it would be so amazing. And it was the exact same podium at the Olympics. So it was so nice to share those moments with those skaters.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of other people happy about that podium. A lot of people happy for both of you. Thank you for taking the time. And once again, congratulations on your career.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, that's going to do it for us here on episode 70, the big 70 on Ice Talk, the figure skating podcast from Ice Network. A big thanks to Megan Duhamel and Eric Radford for joining us again. If you've missed any of our previous 69 episodes, head to Apple Podcasts to check those out. Also, right now on icenetwork.com, we just finished up our Person of the Year series. There's articles on Caitlin Osman, Adam Rapon. I wrote about Nathan Chen, Tessa and Scott, Yuzuru Hanyu, all of your favorites. And you must read Jean-Christophe Berlot's beautiful article. Honestly, you guys, it's a must read on the Person of the Year, Alyona Savchenko. Lots of things happening in figure skating the last few weeks. Patrick Chan announcing his retirement. Of course, Megan and Eric announced theirs. The Shibutanis will be taking at least a season off. We'll see what's going to happen there. And then we're recording this, as I mentioned, on Monday, April 30th. Dancing with the Stars starts tonight, and hopefully we've got a few weeks to watch Adam Rapon, Mariah Nagasu, and Tanya Harding. That's starting this week, Dancing with the Stars. As always, thank you for joining us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on icenetwork.com. Just go to the fans page. Our editor is Mr. Mickey Brown. Our producer is the one and only Kate Sullivan. I'm Nick McCarville. For Jackie Wong, for our whole Ice Network family, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.